Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Welcome, this is George G, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, strong and powerful Charles Rennick. Charles, are you ready to do this?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's go. Charles is a CPA and a CFA. He's a business and accounting advisor. He's the author of All the President's Taxes, What We Can Learn and Borrow from the High Stakes World of President Tax Paying. Charles, excited to have you on. Tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. You know, I've kind of been an accountant now for 15 plus years, and I really enjoy it because it's a problem solving profession, and it kind of mixes reading and writing with math and problem solving. So there are different types of accountants. You can be an auditor, you can be a business advisor, you can help with taxes. I kind of do all of those things, but I really like business advising and taxes because you can really impact people in terms of helping them save a lot of money. But also knowing about auditing is very important because you can help people make sure they don't get audited, or it's never fun to be audited, but if they are being audited, you can advise them and kind of guide them through what is, you know, what would typically be considered not a fun thing. So.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So President's Taxes, what was the motivator behind doing the research, writing the book?
Certainly it's a timely topic. I believe the current president, the former president are fairly accomplished people. And so there's a bit of obviously spin that goes into the national media. But when you actually look at on paper what they've done and who they are, they've made lots of money. President Biden made lots of money after he was vice president. Being vice president is an accomplishment in and of itself. He made a lot of money after he left office, and now he's president. That's a pretty incredible thing just from the standpoint of individual accomplishment. President Trump, also a very accomplished person, has built very large buildings, is fairly prolific when it comes to just coming after business ideas, whatever they are. He sometimes gets knocked because some, you know, people think his business ideas are kooky or, you know, a little bit over the edge or whatever it is. But no one could really dispute the fact that he's actually out there doing things. And, you know, whether or not he got money from his father, that's part of the story in taxes. There's the way that he got his money from his father. There were some tax strategies involved. But as an individual tax preparer and business advisor, saving people money on taxes is very meaningful. Taxes for wealthy individuals are 40 or 50% of their annual income. And that's a very large number. And, you know, for some businesses, their largest expense generally is payroll. So a business of any size, when you get to have 10, 20, 30 employees, when you look at the profit and loss statement, you know, payroll's up there. There are taxes associated with payroll as well. the next biggest expense in most cases, and for a lot of business, the biggest expense is taxes. So helping a business make money, helping individuals keep more money that they make is really, you can really kind of add value at the margins with tax strategies. So somebody making $100,000 a year, if you can save them $10,000 in taxes, which is not uncommon, right? That's 10%. And that's a lot of money, right? Like at the margin, that's a lot of money. Like I would rather have that money in my pocket than not. So what happened was I'm trying to help people save money on taxes. And there's all of this information in the news about the presidents and their taxes. And so I have a bit of a background in politics as well. I am a political science major. I was naturally interested in it. And wow, just a great opportunity to kind of say, hey, this is what they're doing. You can do it too. And it really kind of gets people across the line because there are a lot of people that rightfully so are kind of worried about implementing a tax strategy because they're not sure whether or not it's legal. And, you know, for better or for worse, there are obviously accusations on all sides that all politicians are corrupt. But you can feel fairly confident that if the public has seen it and has seen their taxes and there's not like consistent claims of like, hey, this specific thing is wrong, you can do it. Like there's some talk about Joe Biden's tax strategy being maybe a little bit too aggressive, but not really. And if I tell you what he did and you go look it up and it turns out he actually did it, and I'm telling you that it can save you $10,000, then why not do it too? I mean, there's a lot, it reduces the risk significantly. And those are real numbers. Like that happens. And so, you know, learn about it and save money. What better kind of thing to talk about? I love it.
That makes a ton of sense. And if the president's doing it, well, then why wouldn't I do that too? Right. So
kind of level the playing field, right?
Mm-hmm. And yes, to your point, I'd rather have $10,000 than not have $10,000. So these opportunities are available to us. But to your point again, we are nervous or reticent about it because we don't want to get a letter from the IRS in the mail. But the leader of the free world is employing these strategies, so they're available and actually practically used. Not everybody has every president. Do we have access to all the president's tax returns?
Well, so that's part of the story. Is there's a bit of history. The income tax hasn't been around forever. So the income tax has evolved over time. It really is a construct of the Civil War. And so the first part of the book, and I'm a bit of a history buff too, so I'm kind of like a, I don't know, I just like a lot of things and I'm curious about a lot of things. And I took some really in-depth history classes in college. So part of the book is certainly, you know, I'm pulling from some things that I learned in, you know, in other walks of life, I would say. But the evolution of the income tax, it started during the Civil War. You cannot fund a modern army without a significant tax base. So the Civil War was the first modern war. I kind of talk about that, the irony that the South implemented an income tax, a centralized taxing system, you know, is really kind of in the scope of U.S. history, that's one of the big ironies, I would say. And a lot of people don't realize that when they talk about North and South. I mean, the Industrial Revolution was just as important. Obviously, civil rights are still huge. And civil rights today and social issues still are a bit of dominating the political discussions. But taxes are probably the one thing that impacts people more than anything else. And so taxes are a fundamental part of politics. And so I really like that. I really kind of, you know, the margins, talking about special interest groups, talking about how, you know, there are certain people that do this or that. The first tax under George Washington was on whiskey. And today we would call that a sin tax. And so thinking about now, did he necessarily put that tax in place because he didn't like alcohol? Not necessarily, but it would be very hard to say that they would have been able to fully establish our taxing authority if they had put that tax on milk. right? Because like the Whiskey Rebellion, there were 13,000 militiamen that put that rebellion down, right? Would 13,000 militiamen go and squash a rebellion over a milk tax? Probably not. Like, I just don't think that would happen. So, you know, Lincoln paid tax, even though he might not have needed to. That's a fact, right? So Lincoln did a kind of a holier than thou approach. Jimmy Carter did a holier than thou approach. He did his taxes. It showed that he did not owe any money, and he decided to pay tax anyway, right? Richard Nixon, he was very obviously embroiled in scandal. One of the big scandals of his career was actually a tax scandal, and no one even knows about it. So it's great to talk about it. So really, since Nixon, this issue's become really big. And the reason I say it's become big is because, one, the tax rate has increased significantly. The income tax started at only 3%. Now, again, like I mentioned earlier, it's 40, 50% for the highest earners. So this is a material number. There's more interest in it. What is the president doing? We need to know, just from a body politic perspective, you know, do we have confidence in our leader? But then I put a spin on it and say, hey, like, we get to see this tax return. What can we learn from it? Because as a tax preparer, I kind of thirst to see these tax returns, because I don't get to see everybody's tax returns, but when I get to see them, I get to learn from them. And I get to see, yeah, I mean, it's 500 pages. Trump's tax return is 500 pages, just his individual return. And it references business returns that are all individually 100 plus pages. So Biden's tax return isn't as large, but it references a business return, and we haven't seen his business return. So there's definitely information, there's some intrigue, and then what can we use? I mean, it's fun. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I imagine with the trained eye that you have of being a CPA and a CFA and 15 years in accounting, it is absolutely fascinating to be able to pour through these. So as you are getting to do that, sort of put that investigative hat on with your problem solving hat and your background, are there hundreds of different strategies? Are there a few? Which have been utilized by multiple?
Well, I try to break it down into kind of what I call blocking and tackling issues. You know, that strategies and tactics, right? So there are definitely lots of little tactics where, hey, doing these little things at the margin help. But what are some of the big strategies, right? The big strategy, I would say, is understanding that our system of taxation is based on laws, and laws have nuances, and nuance creates gray. So there's, I say this in the book, there's black, there's white, and there's gray. Right. And somebody told me this once, you know, you go to jail if you do stuff in the black. So you don't want to do stuff in the black. So if it says you shall not do this, you do not do it. Right. If there's white, you can operate in the white and you can sleep at night, and that's great. But you might be able to operate in the gray. And if you're operating in the gray and there's some ambiguity, the best thing to do is keep good documentation, right? Be honest and keep good documentation. And if you're honest and keep good documentation, you're not committing tax fraud. And you're really not creating, like, when you're doing that as it relates to any law, you're not really creating much exposure, especially if you kind of reserve for the potential that someone might, you know, disagree with you. And even in the largest companies, their financial disclosures, there's a required financial disclosure for every large company in this country that says, what are the tax issues that we think might be ambiguous that we are taking? Every company in the whole country has a laundry list of things that they're doing that they think, well, maybe someone, a reasonable person, might disagree, but this is our position. Somebody prove us wrong. Right. So that's, I would say, the big takeaway is, don't just like think that this is cut and dry. It's not. There are some things that are cut and dry. If it says check the box when you have a foreign bank account, you better check the box. Right. But other than those very specific things, there's a lot of flexibility in decision making. And when you make decisions, there's a cascading waterfall effect that, well, if I do this one way, then this is what happens and this is what happens, and voila, I've saved $5,000. You're allowed to structure your taxes. You're allowed not to enter into a transaction today and delay it till next year. You're allowed to do these things that have really, on their face, have no legal implications. But if you structure things slightly different, you save a lot of tax, right? So that's really the overall strategy. Does that make sense?
It does. I think it's fascinating. Do you think that most people understand that? But most people don't pay taxes anyway.
You know, well, even like, so that's a little bit of even that, right? I'm not sure that's exactly true, right? There's sales tax that almost like everybody pays sales tax. And so one of the things that I say, right, is our current system is not perfect, right? We have a democratic system, right? And the ethics of taxes is not up to the taxpayer to decide. The ethics of taxes is our tax system is ethical because it was enacted ethically by a democratic process, right? And so our democratic process has decided that we don't want a national sales tax. That's pretty much the one like alternative to the current tax system that's really kind of people get excited about. But the problem with the national sales tax is it's very regressive. The reason it's regressive is because lower income people spend almost all of their money, where higher income people can save, and sales tax is applied on spending, right? And so they have to come up with all these mechanics to try to make it not regressive and things like that. But the fact is right now, you know, most people still like at the local level pay property taxes. And even if they rent their apartment, the rent is covering the property taxes. So they're paying property taxes and they're paying sales tax. And then at the national level, you're absolutely right. The national income tax is primarily borne by businesses and higher income individuals that make over $100,000, right? So there is that thing. But once you get into that bracket of over $100,000, then you can really save in a powerful way. But even if you're below that bracket, you know, why not save an extra $3,000, or why not structure things a little bit differently to get a bigger refund? And I think that's completely appropriate. If you have three kids and you're not properly structuring your taxes, you might be overpaying or not getting what is considered your, you know, fair share back. Right. So, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That's if we don't like it, vote for someone else.
I think that that's all really well said. And I appreciate that our tax system is ethical because it was put in place through a democratic process ethically. And therefore, these are available to us. And when done correctly, there's an opportunity to pay less taxes ethically. And I wanted to ask you about what is that, for lack of a better term, a threshold. You mentioned $100,000, but even people that are making a little bit less than that do have an opportunity to do it. So if somebody's listening, they say, you know, this is interesting, I'm interested in having more money, how do I know if doing this kind of tax planning is right for me, and how do I get started?
Sure. Yeah, this is what I call, is the juice worth the squeeze, right? Because there is some area where cost of compliance comes into question, right? Like if you go and talk to accountants aren't free. Like if you only save $1,000, but the accountant charges you $1,000, is it worth it? So one of the things that, you know, that kind of someone should think about, obviously they should weigh the pros and cons, dollars and cents wise, how much can I save? But also, you know, just tax preparation in general isn't free to start with. So if you're going to be compliant and you're going to be paying for TurboTax, you're already paying $100, $150. So you have to consider, well, I'm already paying that. If I were to pay an extra $600, $700 a year to actually talk to someone and have a strategy, it really only takes one thing over the course of even 5 years that could really pay for it all. So you don't necessarily, well, you don't know what you don't know, right? And so just structuring things slightly different. Anybody that has their own business, I would say they are doing themselves a disservice if they do not have a tax advisor. If you have your own business, if you get any money via 1099, you need to have an accountant, because the opportunities to save $500, $1,000, $2,000, $10,000, that's low-hanging fruit, right? And you might not know, and you sleep better, right? Because you have a professional doing it. And so at the margin, right, even $40,000 of self-employed income, it's very cost effective in the way that it can structure it, especially with kids, where you can kind of, and if you're married with kid, like there's just so many opportunities. I would say that, you know, educate yourself is free. Read some books, read this book, but there's lots of other books on Amazon for $10, $20, $30 that you read them once and you kind of know the general idea of where you can play and where you can kind of save money. That, to me, that's money well spent for any small business owner, because $10,000 a year is a lot of money. And if you reinvest that in your business or you put that in your kids' college savings account, there's tax-free college savings accounts. You know, there are all of these things, and it's life-changing money if you do it right.
Well said. Well, Charles, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you and engage with you, and where can they get their copy of All the President's Taxes? What we can learn and borrow from the high stakes world of president tax paying.
Well, so I have an accounting firm that's cmrtax.com. That's C as in Charlie, M as in Marco, R as in Rover, cmrtax.com. I have the book's website is potus.tax. And then the book's available on Amazon. And, you know, I'm just really excited to have this opportunity to kind of share something that I'm so passionate about. And I really thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, well, it was a pleasure. If you enjoyed this much as I did, show Charles your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to cmrtax.com and figure out if this planning that we've been talking about is right for you. Go to POTUS, POTUS.tax. It's a great website, by the way, Charles. Nice work on that. And then you can pick up your copy of All the President's Taxes there, or certainly Amazon, which is where we buy everything. Thanks again, Charles.
All righty. Take care. Appreciate it.
And until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.